We began the responsibilities of the husband, the husband's scriptural role. And we had reached the place where we were talking about priorities and the fact that as an administrator, the husband is responsible to see that his priorities are well maintained. We had also suggested that priorities have to do with attention more than with quantity of time. Or, if you please, quality rather than quantity. I would like to suggest at this point, though we will refer to it again later on, that this concept is particularly true with regards to children. If we as fathers could learn quickly that a few moments spent with our children, during which time they have our total attention, is more productive than trying to find longer blocks of time which normally don't seem to find themselves very easily in most of our schedules. And as a result, many fathers fail to spend time with their children. They keep thinking, well, I need to get some time with the fellas or with my daughter. And they think of a block of time. Instead of taking advantage of the 5 or 10 minutes here and there, and using that time by virtue of a demonstration of attention, letting that child know that they have your total attention at that time and that you are thinking about them. Florine is reading a book condensation from the Reader's Digest currently, and she was sharing something with me just a few moments ago regarding this teacher who began a school. Originally, it was just with 2 students, and then it developed and grew, but for slow learners, not retarded, perfectly normal, intelligent children, young people, but who had not learned the habits of study or had not developed in their abilities to study. And she read me one portion of a discussion that this teacher had with a friend, and the discussion is recorded in the book. And the teacher was telling this man about a certain student who was in her class and the needs that he experienced and so forth and so on. And the father of this particular student was known to the man to whom she was speaking. And apparently they both knew this man. And the comment of the man was something like this: "Isn't it amazing how such a successful businessman, able to handle what he is handling, is such a total failure with his child?" Well, it is amazing, but it is not surprising. And I am suggesting to you men that one of the compensations for our very busy schedules is to realize that in the matter of priorities with our children, it's the kind of time, the quality of time, the attention factor that our children sense they are receiving from us that will communicate as much as anything else. Priorities, very important in the manager's thinking processes. And then how about planning? Just planning, planning ahead. One of the needs that wives have expressed in a variety of surveys is to know that their husbands are concerned about what's coming up in the future. Buying new tires for the car. Instead of waiting until you need it and having to go out and pay $140 or $150 for a set of tires, putting a little bit aside each week and having that money available when the need arises. A simple thing, and yet for a woman, a very secure concept. That the husband is thinking ahead. I use this illustration of tires, but it could be almost anything. It could be a piece of equipment that you need in the home. So planning is an important part of managing. What about finances? This morning we were reminded of the importance of this in our question and answer session. The need to try and help our wives be more familiar with and able to handle areas of financial responsibility. Now, may I suggest that this does not necessarily mean that you have to keep the books, gentlemen? You see, it's very possible that your wife is far more gifted at keeping books than you are. It would be fine if you admit that and allow her to do that. You still maintain control. You make the decisions regarding how that is used. But if she enjoys that, if she has a capacity for it, if it's a contribution that she can make to your marriage and to your home, then I suggest that you consider that very seriously. But you must manage those finances. Those are your responsibility. I read a story about a man who was asked about how his finances were going. And he said, "What finances?" He said, "My wife and my government have got that all figured out. Each one takes 50%. Well, he wasn't managing it exactly, but that was an answer. Now, another area, the next area that I would like to suggest regarding this matter of management is scriptural management, if I might use that, or spiritual guide for your home. If you want another term, which is properly used, but perhaps questionable in some of your thinking, but that's the term of the high priest of your family. Responsible for the spiritual welfare of your family. Psalm 78, 5 through 7, a passage that speaks to this issue very clearly. It says the following. Psalm 78, 5 through 7. "He established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers to teach their children, that the next generation might know them, the children yet unborn, and arise and tell them to their children, so that they should set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep His commandments." Now that is a direct command of responsibility to fathers. Now I realize that the spiritual development of the family is a mutual responsibility. It is not the father totally. It's the father and the mother. And in fact, in many ways, there are contributions that the mother makes that are unique because of her contact with the children and because of the basic nature and temperament of a mother as compared to a father. Both are needed. The husband is responsible to see that it's going on. Not that he is doing it all, but that it is being carried out. I believe the Bible talks about three basic areas of spiritual responsibility in this area of management. The first one is teaching, as we have just seen. That has to do with the dissemination of truth, exposing them to truth. When we get to the session on parent-children relationships, we'll discuss this further. But I simply want to mention it at this point and put it into the context of a father's responsibility. Exposing them to truth. And that goes on in a variety of ways. Not just in what you say, but more in what you do. More in your attitudes. These things are more caught than taught. Nevertheless, teaching is a very important part of it. The second is training. Proverbs 22:6, a verse with which you're very familiar. "Train up a child in the way he shall go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Training. Now, in my understanding, training has to do with the development of skills. How to do certain things. How to pray. How to read the Bible. How to communicate spiritual truth. How to do a variety of things. Here again, most of that is caught as our children watch us. I remember the story Ed McCulley told me. Ed was one of the five young men martyred by the Auca Indians in Ecuador. And we were on the field when Ed arrived, and also when Jim Elliott and Pete Fleming arrived, and I had the privilege of getting to know them. And one day, talking to Ed, he was telling me about the influence of his father, a man who was very influential in the Christian Businessmen's Committee across the United States. And he told me, he said, "You know, many, many mornings as a young man when I'd get up, I'd walk by Dad's room, Early in the morning, no matter what time I got up, and the light would be on, I could see the crack under the door, and I knew what he was doing. He was in there reading and praying. I just knew that. You see, the influence of his example trained Ed in the importance of getting alone with God in the morning. I'm not sure that Mr. McCulley preached many sermons on this subject to Ed, but Ed learned the lesson, never forgot it. That's part of training, the how-tos. And then finally, building or developing. Ephesians 6:4 and other passages. And what we're talking about here is the development of character. In other words, the formulation of personal convictions. We teach them truth. We seek to train them in skills. But unless these become part of their personal character of conviction, we have not accomplished our objective. Because as soon as they leave, they'll look for their own ways of doing things. And so somehow, by the grace of God, as we live with them and seek to share with them and encourage them, we seek to build into their lives convictions. Convictions from the Word of God. Not necessarily my convictions regarding everything, but convictions regarding principles that they might later put into practice in their own lives. As I say, we'll talk more about these things having to do with our children in that particular session. But as a spiritual guide, these are some of the responsibilities for which God holds the man responsible. And then, another one, and that has to do with being the counselor. God says that you and I, as husbands, are to be counselors to our family. We are to know well the condition of our flock. That was a passage we saw earlier in Proverbs 27:23. This requires individual attention. Individual attention. May I suggest to you the difference between personal and individual? You can spend time with a person one-to-one, and it will be personal. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's individual. Because you may be just saying the same thing to them that you might say to somebody else. Just a certain kind of truth that you're communicating. But when you stop long enough to find out what that person's individual need is, and then seek to meet that, that is when you are communicating on an individual basis. And that is what we must do with the members of our family. We dare not think that because we get them around us and share some spiritual truth, that we are meeting their individual needs. In order to meet individual needs, we must stop long enough to find out what their need is. We talked about that with regards to our wives and also our children, and then seek by the grace of God to communicate to that particular need. Finally, the officer for discipline. This is another of the responsibilities of the husband as a manager. The officer for discipline. A passage that I'd like for you to jot down and look at your leisure, is 1 Samuel, the 3rd chapter, and verse 13. This is the results of not doing that in the lives of Eli and his sons. And here's what God said to Eli on this occasion. Samuel was the communicator of these thoughts. And I tell him, that I am about to punish his house forever. This is God speaking. For the iniquity which he knew, because his sons were blaspheming God, and he did not restrain them. God holds us, we men. It holds each one of us as the leaders of our home responsible in that same way. He did not restrain them. He knew what they were doing, and he did not restrain them. And God brought punishment on that home and on those children. God is a just God. We said earlier, He's a God of plan and purpose. And when we are seeking to walk according to those purposes, the fact that He is a God of plan and purpose is encouraging. But when we fail to obey what He has to say, His plan and purpose must still be accomplished, as it was in the case of Eli and his sons. Now that's a great responsibility, gentlemen. But we're not in this alone. The one who has created this responsibility has also promised the help that we need. As we are willing to walk with Him and put ourselves in His hands, He promises to strengthen us to fulfill our responsibility. Now the second major area of responsibility of the husband. We've been talking about the husband as a leader. Now we're going to talk about the husband as a lover. How about that? That ought to encourage your hearts. We should have saved this message for the evening session. These passages are primarily in Ephesians 5, 25 through 31, 1 Peter 3, 7, and Colossians 3, 19. They're all very similar, but I give them to you for your consideration and your own study. Let me give you a definition of love, which was shared with us recently, and I like it very, very much. An unselfish concern that freely accepts another and seeks his good. I'll read it again. An unselfish concern that freely accepts another and seeks his good. Now, if you'll notice in that definition, there are two or three things that are very significant. Unselfish, accepts, seeks his good. Unselfish, accepts, and seeks his good. There is the primary essence of what love really is. And we're going to use that definition through our seminar. We'll refer back to it in a number of situations. But I want you to keep it in mind as we consider this subject this afternoon. These qualities are found, 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7. And we're going to look at those more carefully in just a moment. But for now, just jot down that passage, if you will. You're familiar with it, but I'd like for you to look at it. Here is something that was helpful to me when I read it. I'd like to share it with you. Love does not generalize, it discerns. Love does not confuse, it communicates. And love does not judge, it understands. Does not generalize, it discerns. Does not confuse, it communicates. Does not judge, it understands. Now, if you will take that and honestly seek to learn to express it and experience it, I think you'll find that it will provide great rewards in your relationship. How often in a conversation statements are made that are generalized statements? Oh, you're always coming in late for dinner. You never have my shirts ready when I need them. Why can't you be on time sometimes? How come you never do that for me like so-and-so does it for his wife? See, those are all generalizing statements. Probably not that true. Love does not generalize, it discerns. Instead of you never come in on time, you know you've been late the last three times. But it's specific. It's more discerning. You can deal with the issue. The other kind of a statement, just in its essence, is a challenge. That generalizing comment immediately demands a defense because it's a threat. That's why these little phrases can help in your relationship with one another. Colossians 3:14 says that love binds. Love binds. And 1 Corinthians 8:1 says that love builds. Love binds and love builds. Now that means that love holds things together. And love helps develop. Therefore, and listen carefully, love is not some sentimental attitude or involvement. It is a discipline. Because wherever it is necessary to hold things together properly by use of some kind of disciplinary measure, love will do that. Love won't let things just kind of go. Love binds. And love builds. So wherever it's necessary for corrective action to take place for development, love will do that. Because love builds. It's developmental. So it's not a sentimental attitude or involvement. Therefore, the first thing we see about love is that it is an act of the will. It is commanded and therefore must be obeyed. Ephesians 5:25 says, "Husbands, love your wife." That is a command. We could follow this through from Scripture back from Deuteronomy and on following. Deuteronomy 6:5, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God," etc., etc. Into the New Testament, John 13:34 and 35, "A new commandment I give you, that you love one another. By this shall all men know that you are my disciples," and so forth. 1 John 3:23, another positive statement about love. The point I'm seeking to make is that love is commanded, therefore, love must be responded to by an act of the will as we do to any command. Either we say we will obey it or we won't obey it. It's not how I feel. It's whether it's right or wrong. I mentioned a moment ago, I want to give you a certain number of words to help paraphrase 1 Corinthians 13:4 through 7. Here are the qualities that are found in that passage that describe love. Let me give them to you. There is patience. That's the first word. Second is kindness. Third is generosity. Fourth is humility. Fifth, courtesy. Sixth, unselfishness. Seven, good temper. Eight, guilelessness, or pure thoughts, if you please. And nine, sincerity. Now later, take that passage and read it, and insert these words at the point of the other words that are there. And I think you'll find the definition, scripturally, of what God has in mind regarding love. These qualities that we see here. Now, if you please, notice that those qualities must be responded to by an act of the will. I don't always feel patient. Many times I feel impatient. But I can choose to act according to what God says and with His help and demonstrate patience, because love is patient. But it's a choice I make. And we are to discuss this in another message later on. So it's my choice and God's power, a combination of those two things. Philippians 2:12 and 13. Philippians 2:12. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. 13. God will energize you to do and will and do of His good pleasure. It's a combination of my choice and God's power. And love is always demonstrated by actions. Don't ever forget that. We said that it's important to tell our wives that we love them, and it is. But it's just as important to show them that we love them. Actions are part of love. In the United States, and in our society particularly, we have forgotten some of the niceties of love. Some have gone so far as to say that most American men are terrible lovers. And yet we pride ourselves on all our pseudo-sophisticated knowledge of sex and all the rest of it. But the facts are, when it comes to a demonstration of the kind courtesies of love, I'm afraid most of us fall far short of that. And so, we find that this is a forgotten quality in marriage, in most of our experiences. It's unfortunate, but it's true. A man says, well, good night. I work hard, I buy a house, try to get a new car as often as we need it, keep my wife in things that she needs. What else does she expect of me? And a wife, I iron his shirts, or now you don't even iron shirts, do you? I forgot that. Well, at least you wash the shirts and hang them up so that they don't wrinkle so badly. And I cook his meals and I help raise his children. What else does he want? And it's sort of a functional relationship. Each one sort of doing their job. And we stop courting one another. It's really interesting how quickly this happens. A young couple that's wildly in love with each other and romantic about everything, and boy, they're doing, he buys her flowers and she gets all dressed up and gets her hair fixed when they're going out on a date and all the rest of it, and then they get married. And something happens. There is some chemical change that takes place. I wish I knew what it was, because, you know, if we knew what it was, we could bottle it and sell it and all become millionaires. Really could. What is it that happens in marriage that causes the change? That we stop being considerate and kind and thoughtful and gentle and all the other things that we were. I remember one woman said, you know, I don't have any problem with my husband as far as other women are concerned. But she says, I do have as far as his job is concerned. It's way more important than I am. What's the difference? If it's another woman or your job? If your wife feels cut off and cut out from your life, what difference does it make what it is that does it? One of the basic needs that women have is the security of our affection. This started back in Genesis 3:16. His desire, her desire, God said to her, your desire will be for your husband. And that has never changed, gentlemen. And in our society, women may seek to find that desire met in other ways. That's why we have all of the adulterous relationships that we do have. Because women, not finding what they consider to be their needs being met, turn somewhere else. And they always are willing and able to find receptive participants. There are just enough of those kind of people around to take advantage of that kind of situation. Now that's going on in our society continually, and you know that. One of the basic needs, I say again, is the need that my wife has for the security of my affection. My affection as her husband. How I demonstrate that is our business. What it is that meets her need is something she and I have to work out and arrive at. I don't have any suggestions about those things because you are two people just as we are. And you need to work out your guidelines just as we have. But the principle is this. She has that need, and you're the only one who can meet it. You ought to be glad about that. Someone suggested the importance of the verbal expression, I love you, and that's right. Some wives need it more than others, but they all need it. You may have heard the story about the man whose wife was, by the way, there's a cartoon out here about that as well. You know, the man saying to his wife, of course I love you, I'm your husband, that's my job. And that's the way a lot of fellas feel. But this other man I'm thinking about, his wife apparently had asked him if she loved him, or if he loved her. And as she asked him if he loved her, he said, now, sweetheart, do you remember 17 years ago when we stood in front of the preacher? And I said, I love you. Do you remember that? She said, yes. He said, all right, I'll tell you what. If I ever change my mind, I'll let you know. Well, an illustration out of real life. Recently, I was talking to a couple, and she voluntarily said, George, I want you to know something. She said, I want you to know that not only do we love one another very much, but he's my best friend. I thought, how fortunate. Would to God that more husbands and wives could say that. He or she is my best friend. My best friend. In 1 Peter 3:7, we have a concept, a third concept presented of understanding and acceptance. Understanding and acceptance. Now, we have looked at two qualities. The fact that love is an act of the will. Second, that it's a forgotten quality in many marriages. And now third, that it must involve and demonstrate understanding and acceptance. The passage in 1 Peter 3:7 expresses the need for the husband to live considerately with their wives, bestowing honor on the woman as the weaker sex, since you are joint heirs of the grace of life. Notice the answer to this attitude, in order that your prayers may not be hindered. That's how important God says it is. We must demonstrate that attitude toward our wives in order that our prayers may not be hindered. It's a spiritual responsibility that affects our walk with God. How do we do this? Well, one is to understand the differences between men and women, and we're going to talk about these this evening in the next session. The differences between men and women. Have you ever stopped to try to figure those out? Very few people have. And it's one of the areas of greatest conflict that I run into continually. An inability to understand how differently the other person functions, thinks, reacts, feels. But for the moment, let's think of it this way. The husband can help his wife evaluate her abilities, her gifts, and encourage these. This is one way that he can demonstrate understanding and acceptance. To help evaluate her strengths, call them gifts or abilities, and help her develop them. Florine has recently started a program. She started this on her own. We talked about it, and the doctor suggested it as a good program, an exercise program. Because of her physical limitations, she can't do certain things, but swimming was suggested as a possibility. So she's been going over there on her own to the municipal pool here, and she jumps in the car, drives over there, changes, goes in and does her exercising and gets out and comes home. And I know she's been doing it, and I haven't been keeping up on it. I got back from my last trip to the Orient, and our son was visiting us. And we were out together. I think we had gone to play tennis or something. He says, "Hey, Dad, do you know what your wife is doing?" I said, "Well, yeah, I think so." He said, "Do you know what she does when she goes right to that swimming pool?" I said, "Well, she swims, doesn't she?" He said, "Yeah, but do you know what?" I said, "No." He said, "I went over there one day while we were waiting for you to come back from the Orient." He said, "We got in the pool. We started to swim. She did 22 laps in an Olympic length pool." I said, "Come on, Tom, you're not counting right." He says, "Dad, I saw it. And she's doing that." Now, the reason I don't go swimming with her now is I couldn't do 24 laps. And I don't want to admit that. But I'm delighted. And I'm encouraging her to keep that up. It's probably doing her more good than either one of us realize. Just that little thing. Well, it's a poor illustration of what I'm trying to say. But try to find what it is that will encourage your wife, and then you encourage her in that, whatever that might be. That's part of understanding and acceptance. Second under this, don't compare. Don't compare her with another wife or another person, and please don't superimpose on her the image or the abilities of someone else. Oh, and that can be done so subtly, so subtly. You know, old so-and-so was telling me what his wife did the other day. She da-da-da-da-da, and we tell all about this, and our wife can pick up very quickly. Whether we really mean it that way or not, it comes through that way sometimes, that we're comparing. We're comparing. Oh, let's be careful. That can be devastating. Third, protect her from self-imposed demands. Our wives, most of them, are more conscientious than we give them credit for. And they impose demands on themselves that are sometimes not realistic. Part of understanding and acceptance is to protect them from some of these self-imposed demands. Fourth, in understanding and acceptance, learn to know one another's family backgrounds. Now, listen, that does not mean that we excuse ourselves because of what happened in our homes or how our family did certain things or how we were treated. Mark this down. You can never excuse present behavior on the basis of past experience. We are responsible to operate today in the present on the basis of what we know is right and wrong according to the Word of God. We cannot allow ourselves to excuse our behavior on the basis of some past experience. To understand it, yes. But if it's wrong, it must be corrected. But it's important and helpful to understand one another's family backgrounds so that we can know what areas there are that need further development in each of us in our relationship. So there must be a great deal of communication regarding that. And in the area of your sexual experience, understanding and acceptance involves a willingness to discuss these areas honestly and openly and arrive at meaningful and mutually satisfactory or satisfying conclusions. Another way in which to demonstrate understanding and acceptance is by listening. By listening. Now, I'm sure all of you work at this, and this little cartoon kind of helps us understand this. Security is having someone listen to you. There's Snoopy acting as a listening agent for the little girl here. I can't remember her name. But the fact is, that is true. There is a fantastic amount of security in knowing that there's someone who will listen to you. Someone who will listen. Listening is a great part of understanding and acceptance. One thing I've learned is that as I listen, I may not have to say a great deal, but just allowing an opportunity to speak clarifies a lot of the thinking. A statement was made in the past, "Thoughts disentangle themselves, passing over the lips and through the fingertips." And many times just sitting there and encouraging your wife to talk to you will untangle her thoughts. This has happened more than once as we've talked. And then finally, communicate essentiality. Communicate essentiality. Let her know that you need her. Let her know that she is important to you. Genesis 2:18, she was created to help you. And we're going to talk about this when we talk about the wife. But this is God's evaluation of your wife. He gave her to you as a helper. Let her know how she does help you. Communicate this. Let her know how important she is to your whole life. Communicate essentiality. Well, it's a big job that the Lord has given us, men. And it's a big responsibility. But again, He has promised to give us the necessary strength and the grace to be able to fulfill this. And as we do, you can rest assured that He is going to strengthen and enable us because He's promised that.